Hello and welcome to Talking Tourism, the podcast series especially for tourism operators and industry professionals. I'm Tracy Mallett and I'll be your host for today's episode. Talking Tourism is an initiative of Tourism Industry Council Tasmania. TICT is the peak industry body for the tourism industry in the beautiful state of Tasmania. If you are a regular listener to Talking Tourism, welcome back. If you're a first-time listener and enjoy today's episode, remember there are now more than 130 episodes of Talking Tourism Conversations available from wherever you access your podcasts, or you can simply stream them from the TICT website at tict.com.au. We are recording this podcast today on the lands of the Palawa and Pakana, and TICT offers its respects to the Tasmanian Aboriginal people, their elders past and present, for their enduring care and management of these islands. Today's episode is brought to you by our partner VXT. VXT is a purpose-built organisation with the sole purpose to train a hospitality and tourism workforce to deliver the Tasmanian workforce. VXT offers an array of industry-led, outcome-focused training courses both online and around Tasmania. Thanks to VXT for their generous support of TICT and for helping make this episode of Talking Tourism possible. Now, let's get into today's conversation with Mindy Woods. Former physiotherapist, MasterChef Australia finalist in 2012, and more recently CEO of Sydney's Lotus Dining Group, Mindy is currently studying sustainable horticulture and bush food with the goal of protecting native foods, the environment, and reigniting Indigenous culture. You must taste a culture to truly understand it. That's why Mindy, a proud First Nations woman, opened her very own native-inspired restaurant, Kakala, on ancestral country, creating opportunities for Indigenous and non-Indigenous people to connect with Aboriginal culture, art, and stories through food. Mindy believes that food is a powerful way to empower all Australians to know and form relationships with each other and the environment around us. Her message is as powerful and inspiring as her cuisine. Welcome, Mindy, to Talking Tourism.
Yopalinga, Jingila, how are you?
Very well, thank you, and lovely recognition of our Palawakani language. Now, quick question, is this your first time to Tasmania?
It's not my first time to Tasmania, and I absolutely love coming back. I was so excited when I got the opportunity to come down here this time. I just wish it was for a lot longer.
That's all right. We'll have to have you back again. Now, we're obviously in the beautiful countryside around Launceston. Are you aware that Launceston has been designated a UNESCO Creative City of Gastronomy?
I had no idea. So much to learn. I feel like every time I come to Tassie, I'm learning something new, and what an abundance that you have.
We do indeed. Now, Kipli is the Palawakani word for food, and we do have a few Palawa Kipli experiences around Tasmania, so I hope you do get to try them over
Absolutely.
The course of time. But to kick us off, perhaps take me through your career journey with food.
Oh, it's been pretty wild, hasn't it? I mean, I should have realised from being a little girl that I was always meant to be in food, but doing the good thing and being a good daughter, I went off to university and studied a master's in physiotherapy, which I really enjoyed. I loved it. I loved connecting with people and creating opportunities for them to heal. But I just had a burning desire to be cooking and to be feeding people. And that came from being with family and being around the dinner table. My dad's a chef, so I was always under his feet in the kitchen. And, you know, when we were family, as mob, we'd be out eating together, and that's where people connect. And I feel like that love around the connection of humans around food really inspired me to take the leap and take the plunge and getting to cooking full time.
Fabulous. Now, as you touched on, we do some pretty good local produce in this part of Tasmania and indeed across the state. So how can some of our local producers better tell the story of their food?
Story is, I mean, it's all about the connection. And honestly, the power of storytelling, I always say to people that we come from the home of the original storytellers. Mm. And to connect people around the story of food, I mean, you've already got their buy-in before they've even taken their first bite, you know. We come from such a rich and abundant culture. And as Australians, we often forget to realise how rich our culture is. You know, we travel the world, you know, it's in our bones. We travel the world to go and get these experiences, particularly around food. We go to France, we go to Italy. We want to experience those cultures through their food, champagne and cheeses and pizzas and pastas. But what we fail to recognise as Australian is to do that in our very own backyards. And coming from the oldest civilization, the oldest surviving civilization on Earth, of course that makes us the oldest cooks. We've got the world's oldest ingredients. We're the first bakers. We've got the oldest form of aquaculture in the world, oyster farming and mussel farming. That all comes from Australia. We've got so much to celebrate in that way. And you know, the rest of the world's thirsty for it. They want to experience what's going on in Australia and in Tasmania. I really hope all Australians get to, you know, an opportunity to experience it, because my God, it gives you a sense of place and it gives you a sense of connection, particularly when you hear those ancient stories. And even when we're talking about provenance of the beautiful modern foods that we have today, we've got so much to celebrate and to be proud of.
Absolutely. It's interesting you say that, because a lot of our local producers have embraced their connection to land, and Tasmania is obviously very wealthy in soil and climate and the ability to grow food. And a lot of those producers obviously aren't from an Aboriginal background, but that connection to land has become very important to our producers. So how can they embed that into their food story?
Absolutely. I don't think you need to be First Nations to have a connection. I think it's important to recognise and acknowledge our First Nations people, but we all can connect. You know, connection, when you think about it, connection's the idea that nothing operates in isolation, and none of us do. Yeah. We don't operate in isolation from each other. We don't operate in isolation from our relationship or our connection to the land or the birds, you know, the skies, the seas and the waters around us. So I think when we recognise that we are part of an entity, we are part of a process, we are not operating singularly in this or in isolation, and we need all these other things to work in harmony for us to benefit and to grow and to exist with it as well. So I feel like when you do have a connection to that space and that land, you're falling in love with it a little bit, you know, and when you fall in love with something, you want to take care of it. And that's what I really hope to inspire around all people around our beautiful native food, is that connection to country.
Beautiful segue to my next question, Mindy. Thank you. How can the producers of some of our more traditional food products, and you've alluded to cheese, but we do pork and beef and a whole range of products really well. So how can some of those producers incorporate some more Aboriginal Palawa food offerings?
Oh my God, it works so well. I mean, when it comes from country and when it's local and it's seasonal, it's going to work with the food that grows around you, you know, and it does work so well with those less traditional kind of products. So pork, cattle, chicken, poultry, all those kind of things. When you're actually looking at reflecting the flavours of your country on your menu, number one, you make a chef's job very, very easy. And two, what you're doing is truly reflecting that country. You think of all the beautiful native spices that you guys have down this way. You think of all those beautiful coastal succulents that you have. They're going to work so well with the flavours of the food that these cattle and these animals are feeding from. You know, the flavours of country doesn't just come from the tips of the grass. It comes from down into that nutrient rich soil. It comes from the sea spray. It comes from the wind. It comes from that beautiful sunlight, that yagun that we call it at home, what that beams down onto country. So when we can source foods locally, seasonally, it's going to taste good. It's going to work. And it's just about being a little bit courageous in experimenting with it, I think, too.
Oh, I think you're dead right there. Yes. Obviously, we're an island, so I think you talked earlier about using local produce and keeping it all local. In the theme of the conference around positive impact, how can we better use our local produce and keep our food miles down really low, and again, embed that into the story?
I mean, isn't that just the trick? It's the trick for everyone. I always say to people, go to your local farmers markets, make sure that you're sourcing locally wherever possible, eat in season. Country gives you what you need at any time of year. So when we're looking at things, particularly on country, for me, at the moment we've got beautiful ooray, our Davidson plums, that's abundant. We've got our beautiful beach echinaceas and things like that. They're loaded full of vitamins and minerals, right? So why aren't we using them in our everyday cuisine? You've got the same little micro kind of climate down here where you can really leverage from what country is giving you, using those things and making sure you're using, I always call them best overs, I don't call them leftovers, being creative around your leftovers and make them even better than what they were before. I think of stews and casseroles and curries, creating a beautiful little pie at that for the next day or for the day after. There are so many things that we can be doing, and of course food waste is a huge problem in our country. it's a problem everywhere, particularly in Australia, where 40% of what we're purchasing is ending up in the bin. If we just converted that to a financial kind of sense, I'm sure people would be mortified to know how much they're throwing into the bin. So really get creative about all that beautiful food that you have at home. And yeah, reach out to your neighbors, start growing stuff at home. I love encouraging people to grow whatever they can at home. And of course, when you're growing natives that are endemic to your area, they're going to grow like weeds. So be careful if they start growing at home, because you'll be handing them out to the neighbors. Because they grow here, they don't need herbicides, they don't need pesticides, they don't need any of that kind of crazy stuff. They're drought resistant. We all have problems with drought. You know, they're pest resistant. So you're not going to have to spray nasty kind of, you know, herbicides and pesticides and all that kind of thing on them. Start growing some stuff at home.
Food waste is actually a really good point. Again, being an island, it's not something that we want to dispose of poorly. I've heard some great stories of producers lately getting connected and using waste carrots or waste apples to feed to their animals. Is this something you've seen before? Because clearly that's a brilliant way of reducing food waste.
Absolutely. I mean, food waste is, you know, I mean, when you think about it, we are the main species, humans, that create waste. We are, whether it's food or whether it's plastics, we are one of the only species that really does create a lot of waste. And it is really unnecessary, but that is going into those collaborative partnerships, working within your community, those connections, to make sure that we're doing whatever we can to alleviate that going into landfill. You guys don't have much space to be creating, you know, big dumps of rubbish all around this beautiful countryside, and food is a big part of what goes into waste. So when we're looking at being creative, working in partnerships and collaborations, none of us can do this alone. You know, I've got a restaurant. I cannot create that business. I cannot create what I do without working with local farmers. I often go out onto their properties because I go to the local farmers markets every Thursday, collect all my goodies for Kakala, but I go out to their properties. I connect with them. I hear about their stories on their properties. And if it is on ancestral country for me, I tell them a little bit about the traditional use of that land. There might have been a ceremonial spot. It might have been a meeting point. It might have been a thoroughfare for travelling, you know. So all of us working together is that where that greater impact and that greater power comes from.
Fabulous. I touched on the UNESCO Creative City of Gastronomy designation for Launceston just before. I realise I may be putting you on the spot, but how can we use that designation to incorporate Tasmania's journey with Palawa food?
Oh, yeah, wow. I'm so proud of you, Mob, for getting that. I had no idea. I'm a little bit jealous too, hey?
There's not many in Australia,
yeah,
no.
Well, I always think that, you know, the Northern Rivers region is really kind of setting the rest of Australia on fire. I've got to rethink that, because obviously we're not. Wow. I mean, that is something to be so deadly proud of. And honestly, when you get a recognition like that, that is something to recognise all the hard work and commitment of the community that's gone to getting that award. But it's also there as a great motivator to do more and to keep celebrating and to keep working together and to promote it out to the rest of Australia. Because like I said, we get so many international travellers, but as Australians, we fail to recognise how deadly this place is and how much we could learn from our very own backyard. That's why for me, travelling around Australia, connecting with communities all over this beautiful and vast land is so important. You realise the different geographies, you realise the different cultures within Australia. And of course, Tasmania is just abundant with it. So I say raise it from, you know, up on flags and start flying those flags around and be so proud of that achievement. Endorsing that, being proud of it, and promoting it to the rest of Australia is really going to help boost this economy.
It is. And in fact, promoting it is probably something that we still need to do, back to your earlier advice, in our own backyard first, because Launceston may be the city that's been designated, but it's our region that has all of these wonderful produce offerings. And of course, I guess part of the storytelling is recognising that gastronomy is not the high-end restaurant quality
certainly
food.
Isn't.
It's about telling that story of food.
It is the telling, and the story starts from that seed in the ground.
Yeah.
It starts from the water that falls on it. There is so many bits and pieces that it takes before it gets to those restaurants. Mm. You know, I often remind a lot of my customers when they're ordering beautiful oysters, and boy, you've got some really good oysters down this way. Really jealous. But those oysters take 3 years in our clean oceans to grow, and they need pristine conditions for us to consume them. They take sometimes 18 to 20 touches of a human hand before they reach a restaurant. Isn't that incredible? And they're gone in a flash. You know, I love oysters. I had a dozen last night. I love them just natural, bit of squeeze of lemon, maybe some coastal succulents on there. They just speak of the ocean to me. You know what I mean? So when we're looking at those things and we can celebrate those things, there is so much human energy. There are so many natural resources to creating these movements, and that's what we've got to really be aware of.
The Tassie food scene incorporates a lot of small operators, and that's part of our appeal, obviously. It's about experiencing life like a local. So you may go to a cafe or a restaurant in a small country town in Tasmania, and they may have a small but local menu. But back to the earlier conversation around food waste, what might be some of the products that we should be switching out in this modern day that just aren't appropriate anymore?
Well, I don't know if things aren't necessarily appropriate, but what I would really encourage all small producers and even people in their home kitchens to do is look at what's around us and look at those really easy substitutes for native food that we can seamlessly bring into our kitchens. Think about beautiful Tasmanian pepper berry, hey? I mean, you guys kind of, you know, fly the flag on that one, and it is known to be an incredible culinary spice that is in high demand for chefs all around the world. It survived here under these crazy Antarctic kind of conditions at times, and that's what makes it so pungent. It was a medicine food. It's also a culinary food, and it has been used for thousands of years by mob. But why aren't we using it prolifically in our cuisines today? So switching out your black and white pepper, that old sawdust that you got sitting in your kind of cupboard at home, and I honestly do think white pepper is like sawdust, switch it out for native pepper because it is prolific down here. You've got not only those beautiful little berries that add aroma, they add spice, they add flavour. It is incredible, and I'm always mesmerised by our native peppers and what they can do to elevate and bring flavour to food. But also you've got that beautiful pepper leaf. Almost that whole plant was used culturally. The bark was used as a tea, as a medicine. The leaves were used as a tea. They were used for smoking ceremonies too. How about bring a touch of that ancient culture into your kitchen and into your food? You know, when you're matching that beautiful rich pepper berry with things like beef and pork, it is unbelievable. When you're using that pepper leaf, which is a little bit milder against seafood, I mean, I just imagine it going into those beautiful scallop pies. Like, I'm thinking, absolutely, get some pepper leaf into that, or even some beautiful aniseed myrtle. We've got so many spices in this country that are so interchangeable, stuff that's familiar to us. So you think about, you know, the peppers, we've got the pepper leaf, all interchangeable for your standard pepper, and so much tastier and so much more reflective of country, our terroir, our country, our place.
That's a really good point, and that will require some more storytelling. And I reflect on the fact I have a pepperberry farmer who lives down the road from me, and I visited his farm recently, and he exports 96% of his pepperberries to Germany. So is that because locals don't know to use a Tasmanian pepperberry in place of?
Absolutely. You know, our native food is almost like considered exotic in this country. Isn't that wild? It blows my mind. You think about how we kind of considered Chinese food or Thai food, you know, 30 years ago where it was, whoa, what's going on here? Native food is in that basket right now. We're terrified to give it a go. Sometimes I think it's that misconception that native food is kind of food for survival. It's certainly not. It is high demand food internationally because they're onto something good and they know the quality of it. They know the nutritional value of it. And you need just a touch. They're so potent in their flavour profiles. They're so nutrient dense that you need just a touch. I would love to see native pepper and native pepper leaf in every single kitchen, commercial and home across Australia.
So we've all got a role to
There's
play.
There's a challenge for you.
Absolutely, to promote that and tell that story. It fits in beautifully with the theme of storytelling, doesn't it? Thanks, Mindy. It's been great to chat and explore this a little more. I think this is definitely potential for Tasmanian food, hospitality our city of gastronomy.
I totally agree.
But before we let you go, it wouldn't be an episode of Talking Tourism without what we call the Big Seven Questions. Now, everyone's going to judge you on this more than anything. So are you ready?
I feel judged already. Be kind, Tassie.
Your favourite spot in Tasmania and why?
Oh, I'm lucky. I've seen a bit, but God, there's so much more to see. So please don't judge me. I do love the Bay of Fires. I just feel electrified when I go there. It's like me walking out on country back home and feeling like country is just speaking to me. I don't know if it's that ruggedness of it, that exposed kind of coast. I don't know what it is, but my God, I just feel so connected in the moment that I'm in that beautiful place, and there is so much to experience in those moments.
It's an absolutely beautiful place. Your favourite travel destination anywhere in the world?
Well, it's going to seem really cheesy, but honestly, it's Australia.
Nice.
I have travelled the world. I've been very fortunate, particularly through my career in cooking, to travel the world, to take native foods across the world, to cook in crazy places like Dubai and take my native ingredients there, in India, to the UK. But there is nothing like coming home. And the more I travel Australia, the more I realise how rich we are in culture. I know we're only a nation that considers itself to be 250 years old. We've got so much more richness than that. We've got so much richness to experience, to explore, and to celebrate. I wish all Australians felt as proud to be Australian as I do, because I am wowed every time I travel somewhere new, and Tasmania is definitely one of those places.
There's definitely something in the adage that we should all explore our own backyard first, totally. Isn't there? Now, if someone's coming to Tasmania for the very first time in their life and they ask you what's the one thing they absolutely must experience while they're here, what do you tell them?
Oh, it's an easy one for me. I mean, Tasmania ticks all the boxes in terms of travel. And I'm a little bit of a luxury pig. I kind of like the idea of being out on a bloody tent. I know it sounds weird because I go out foraging and I'm a First Nations woman, but being out in the cold and the dark in a tent that leaks is not my idea of holidays. But you guys do the wild and you do wine and wildlife better than probably any other place in Australia, let alone the world. Of course, you have to experience the wild and the wildlife here. There is nothing like it. The wines from this cool climate are world class. I've got a lot of them on my list at Kakala. But the wildlife is just so prolific, and it just makes you realise that we are all part of something so much greater. You know, and then you've got all these beautiful travelling experiences that you can do. I mean, talk about glamping. You guys do it very well, and I'm all for it. So this is a place that you have to experience country through the food, through the wine, and through the beautiful environment that you have surrounding you.
So you would see that beautiful environment if you were walking the overland track. So if you're doing that for 5 days with three other people and you can choose anyone in the world, famous, not so famous, living or dead, who would you choose to go with you and why?
Oh, this is an easy one for me. I would give anything in the world to spend five more days with my beautiful Nan, Margie Felton. She was a beautiful Bundjalung woman that was the first to teach me about native food and culture. And of course, being out there with Nan, she was just such a font of knowledge. I know I wouldn't be going hungry. I'd be learning and connecting with country, and I would have some beautiful company. So I'd love to be doing it with my Nan. The next person is actually Julia Zemiro. You guys are a fan of Julia.
Absolutely.
Oh my God. I'm such a fan of that woman. I just think she is a shining light in Australia. And I was recently got to be part of her Australian program, Great Australian Walks. She's walked all around country. She's connected with mob. She's connected with community. And that's the type of travel show we need in this country, to shine a light on how incredible Australia is. She knows so much about, I think, everything, whether it's music or art and country and culture. You know you're going to have a really deadly playlist when she kind of is out there with you. You know you're going to have great conversation and really good laughs. So I'll definitely take Julia with me.
And your third person?
My third person, oh my God, I would be murdered if I didn't mention my beautiful wife, Rochelle. I couldn't leave her behind. And I would definitely bring her along. She is kind of the yin to my yang. I'm the wild one. She's a sensible one. I do need someone to rein me in at times. And I am actually afraid of the dark, believe it or not. So when I'm at home alone, I sleep with the lights on. So I need someone there with me, because in the middle of the night when I start to get scared by the noises around me, I need someone there to calm me down. So I'd bring along my beautiful wife, Rochelle.
That is a great combination. Four powerful women. I love it. Now, if you were road tripping around Tasmania before or after you've walked the overland track, you referred to your playlist before. So what would you be listening to?
I would be listening listening to Wham. I mean, oh, who cool. does not love Wham? It is such upbeat, fun 80s like rock pop. Every time I listen to that music, I just feel good. I feel like having a groove. So once that's on the playlist, everyone's in a good vibes and you're just soaking it up.
Great choice. And when you arrive at your destination, what's your tipple of choice?
Oh, I mean, I'm in the place of whiskey, so how could I not say whiskey? And having it neat, this beautiful, pristine water and the whiskey that you fellas are creating down here, we know it's world class. I'm sure you're keeping a lot of it down here away from the rest of us. I need you to send some mine up my way, but definitely a whiskey neat.
Sounds great. Now the last one, which is the big debate, the big question, curried Tasmanian scallops, a culinary delight or a culinary crime?
How can they not be a culinary delight? Come on, Tasmania. This is something you mob need to be really proud of. I was lucky to have them the first time I've come down here and honestly, I dream about eating that pie. Mm. It is delicious. It's one of those really interesting flavour combinations that shouldn't work based on culinary principles. It should not work. Scallops are sweet, they're delicate. Curry is like punchy and aromatic and overbearing. But for whatever reason, I don't know if it's just the magic of that combination or what, but it is absolutely a hit. And I'll give you a little secret. I loved it so much that I'm going to be putting a native-inspired version into my cookbook that's coming out next year. So look out. It's definitely a culinary delight.
I couldn't agree more and I'll look forward to that cookbook. But I can tell you that curried Tasmanian scallops was one of the things that got me to move here. So
yeah,
thanks, Mindy. And thank you for listening to today's episode of Talking Tourism. Remember to subscribe to hear more episodes as we release them every 2 weeks or so. Also, remember to tell a friend or tourism colleague to check out our podcasts. Talking Tourism is an initiative of Tourism Industry Council Tasmania, and today's episode was brought to you with the support of our partner, VXT. A big thanks also to Caleb Miller at Mac40, our audio specialist who produces these episodes. I'm your host, Tracy Mallett, and we'll catch up next time.